Hello, I'm Dave Jeffrey, welcoming you once again to Optimal Life. It's a program aimed at when we start to forget about work and begin thinking about those wonderful years ahead. Today we're going to look at clutter. As we age and maybe downsize, is clutter a problem for you? We've got some interesting hints. And travel. Do it yourself versus package deal. What is best for you? And sex, yes, we cover all topics here. Should we be thinking about no strings attached sex in our later years? Some interesting observations. Okay, we begin with the subject today of cluttering. It's estimated that up to 600,000 Australians live with a hoarding disorder. And this is taken from the senior magazine, The March Edition. It said, it leads to excessive collecting and the inability to throw away worthless items. And I think we can probably all associate a bit with this. A far more common ailment that many people suffer from is the feeling of being surrounded by stuff. You know, all that clutter, a pile of unloved sports equipment in the garage. There's clothes that no longer fit you stuffed into the back of the wardrobe in the hope of one day you'll be able to wear them. A mountain of toys the kids used to have and grown out of. They're stored out of sight at the back of the house. This is the stuff that literally hordes of people can relate to. But we never deal with it. Why? Well, we make excuses. Life is too busy. Shopping makes me feel good. Or I might use that gut buster again one day. And when it comes to downsizing, especially if you're moving from a large family home to a smaller apartment, the thought of dealing with all that stuff that you've accumulated over the years is rather daunting. What do you chuck away? What do you pass on to family members? And what do you keep? Well, to answer that question, we have a rule of thumb here. Simply, if you have not used it in the past year, or since 1986 in the case of the aforementioned tummy trimmer, get rid of it. Now, we've got four options to help you do this. There's trash, recycle, sell, or donate. Firstly, trash. Throw it straight into the bin, or for longer items, take it to your local transfer station. Recycle. If it's made from recyclable material, toss it into the recycling bin. Sell it. If you have stuff that's in good nick and you could recoup some money, why not sell it? There are many ways to approach this, from notice boards at the local shops. You might like to go online and buy, swap and sell sites. Lastly, you could donate it. Sometimes the effort it takes to sell stuff fails to turn us on too much. It goes into the too hard basket. Our to-do list is far too long already. You may consider donating those baby clothes to the women's refuge, or you could give unread books to the local youth hostel. Now, here's an important thing. You've got to avoid new clutter replacing the old. How do you do it? Well, make sure that you only keep items that you love or need on a regular, maybe seasonal basis. Christmas decorations, for example. If things are sentimental, then perhaps a photo of them will replace them well. Those school trophies. There's a digital version of your 1980s music collection that'll keep the memory alive. When you buy things, buy them with a conscious intent that they will be beneficial. Do not buy them just because they're at the 3-for-1 sale. Okay, the big question, where do I start? And they've got some good advice here. It says the best place to start is by not looking at the big picture. That will inevitably be overwhelming. Take your clutter perhaps room by room, maybe even one weekend at a time. Another popular approach is to start on the first of the month, getting rid of one thing on the first day, two things on the second day, three things on the third day, and so on. Do this for as much of the month as you can. Do not buy anything in that time. This will help you reduce the temptation to buy again. It will also break any habitual tendencies. Well, that item taken from the March edition of the Senior Newspaper, decluttering. Some good hints there how to do it. We're going to change now to travel. DIY versus package deals. What is best for you? This is called Package Travel to Get More Value for Your Cash. Written by Anthony Keane and Sophie Ellsworth, it's taken from the financial section of The Telegraph on the 29th of March. Travellers who try to save money by taking a do-it-yourself approach to holiday bookings sometimes risk missing out on big savings. While do-it-yourself travel offers the freedom of doing your own thing, conversely, holiday packages can often have a lot of additional value. Travel advisor and manager Brendan Sawyers said people planning their own holidays needed to consider the overall costs earlier. For example, a cheap seven-night price for a five-star hotel might look good initially, but sometimes there's a $45 per person breakfast charge, sometimes $75 for a steak dinner. These overall costs quickly add up, he says. A packaged holiday offering will almost always have more value than booking individual components yourself. The value can be seen in both the bottom line and the additional inclusions or experiences. These are within an inclusive holiday package. For example, an 11-day China tour, including flights and accommodation, was available for $800, he said. Well, return flights on their own average $500. In addition, travel operators can lock in low prices with suppliers for things like landmarks, museums, and other activities. They do this when specials and low prices are on. It's something that solo travellers can overlook when they're haggling over the world for cheaper rates. Do-it-yourself travellers can often overlook things like hidden costs, tipping, meals being overpriced in popular tourist areas. Australian travellers are not used to tipping in their everyday lives. Before booking packages, people should check if there were discounts available for past passengers, maybe friends, multi-trip bookings. Travel marketing agency Gate 7's managing director Joe Palmer said people now prefer experience over possessions. Australians cruise more per year than any other country in the world. If you still want to go travel DIY style, look at saving money by mixing and matching flights. Choose different airlines or each leg of the trip. And here's another good tip, Sunday night bookings could also save you money as well. Why? Well, apparently business travellers book Monday to Friday, and leisure travellers tend to go Friday to Saturday. This leaves Sunday void and likely for cheaper all-round deals. A little bit there on travel, how to save money. Package deals versus DIY. They're saying normally, not always, but normally package deals are best. Okay, now we go to the subject of sex, and as we said in the introduction here, we cover all topics on this program. A few weeks ago, we looked at the subject of hugs and sex. Well, now we ask the question, should I be having no string sex in my later years? This is taken from the Sunday Telly on the 21st of April. From the Body and Soul section, it's entitled Off the Record. It's written by Susie Godson. She says, got an embarrassing question? Ask my panel. And the question is, I am a 51-year-old divorced woman. I'm not quite ready for a new relationship because the divorce was recent. But the marriage was largely sexless, particularly for the last 3 years or so. I miss the physical company of a man. Do you think I should practice with some one-night stands? Okay, well, Susie Godson does her best to answer the question. The trouble with no strings attached sex is that it has the nasty habit of tying people in knots. People think that they won't get emotionally involved, but often they do. And women sometimes find it more difficult than men to compartmentalize sex. This may simply reflect that many men have a stronger sex drive. Women, on the other hand, generally find it less satisfying to engage in meaningless sex. This could be because we are taught from a very early age that sex is an experience that can have meaningful consequences, namely pregnancy. But it could also be that lots of women need an emotional connection before they feel comfortable being intimate. Divorce can be such a toxic experience. Most people emerge from it feeling fragile, vulnerable, and cautious. So, it's not necessarily the best time for you to be seeking a new relationship. That is, whether it be casual or more intense. Having said that, we are programmed to bond with each other. So, perhaps despite our better judgment, some of us deal with the breakup by looking forward to a new sexual partner. We kid ourselves that we will not get emotionally involved. But it's not easy to avoid this at any age. Several of my friends have tried to use casual sex as a way of getting over a painful split. It has not worked for any of them. Of course, that is their only experience, and this may not apply to everyone. But I would advise you to exercise caution. Why? Because it's not necessarily a positive experience for everyone. Sometimes people think they want sex, but actually they want someone to take care of them, make them feel valuable and needed. Casual sex is unlikely to lead to this. You may find yourself instead feeling rejected, embarrassed, and rather stupid. However, if you need someone with whom you want to fling and feel excited, this is quite another matter. Just go for it. As long as you both are clear about what you want from the experience. Is it fun? A short fling of a few weeks? That can be the way of getting back in touch with your body, particularly if you've been in a sexless relationship for a long time. It is important, though, to be honest with yourself and with each other about your motivation. This is so you do not end up hurt or feeling rejected. But flings are one thing and one-night stands are another. As for one-night stands, I'm not sure that you would feel completely comfortable with it. As you are already fragile, it's possible that it could do more harm than good. Now, there's an interesting end to this article. It said, if it's just sex that you want, the safest person to have it with is yourself. Why not take the time to focus on your own body at the moment? Buy a really good vibrator. Learn what your body arousal feels like. Learn about your body. Read some intelligent articles on it. Learn to appreciate the path from your first faint flickerings of desire to an orgasm. The more you learn about yourself and what you want, the more sexually confident you will be when the right person does come along. That article taken from the Sunday Telly on the 21st of April asks the question, should I have no strings attached sex in my later life? Well, the answer is, be careful. But they said the best person to have sex with is yourself, or the safest. We're going to change now to the very important subject of being online in our later years. Being online can open a world of possibilities. This is taken from the autumn edition 2019 of the Veteran Affairs magazine. It's a short article from the Aging Well section. The topic is called Be Connected. Be Connected is a free Australian government program aimed at increasing confidence, skills and online safety of older Australians. It teaches how to use digital technology. It has a range of topics that teach the basics of using a digital service. Such things like sending emails, shopping online, sharing photos with the family and more. Be Connected will help Australians, especially older Australians, start their online journey. Improve your digital skills, your confidence and knowledge. Then you can participate, stay connected with family, friends in the modern digital world. More than 2,000 community organisations have joined Be Connected Network, they are offering free, personalised, face-to-face coaching. They're supporting helping getting older Australians online. Now, I think this is very, very important. We should all be thinking about this. Simple. How do you get in touch with them? I'll give you a website and then a phone number. Now, the website is one word, beconnected.esafety.gov.au, and the phone number, 1300 795 897. I'll come back and say that again. Okay, it's beconnected.esafety.gov.au or the phone number 1300 795 897. Maybe I'll see you online. You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Now, this program specifically looks at those later years in our life, perhaps when we're leaving work, entering retirement, and in some cases, entering special care. It's time to talk about who pays and how much. This is taken from the Senior magazine in the April edition. Residential aged care means tested, or is it affordable? Is that a myth? It's written by the aged care guru, Rachel Lane. Many retirees believe residential care is means tested and therefore quite affordable. However, when it comes to what you pay, one definitely does not equate the other. As a percentage of their wealth, low-means residents pay a price, 50 cents in every dollar of income above $27,000 a year, plus 17.5% of their assets between $49,000 and $168,000 are levied as an accommodation contribution. Okay, so what does this equate to? Well, it means that someone on a full-age pension with $150,000 in assets can pay $48 a day. Or they might pay an equivalent lump sum of $296,000. So, means-tested does not mean affordable. I am seeing cases across the country of low-means residents paying more than those who are market-price payers. Market price payers are residents who do not qualify as financially disadvantaged. They are therefore required to pay the full market price or a negotiated amount of the market price for their accommodation. How is it possible that those with greater means are paying less? Firstly, aged care facilities are under pressure to increase their occupancy. Competition from home care packages, private care and alternative arrangements such as retirement villages have caused occupancy in residential aged care to drop. They are currently sitting at about 90% capacity. That is a 10-year low. Now, there's a second reason why sometimes those with the greater means pay less. The amount low means aged care a resident pays is calculated and capped at the accommodation supplement set by the government, not the market price. Each aged care facility is advised how much to charge the resident. Also, the amount the resident pays reduces the government funding on a dollar-for-dollar basis. In older facilities, where there is a combination of single rooms and shared rooms, the shared rooms have typically been accommodation offered to lower-means residents. However, when a new facility opens, every room is single with an ensuite bathroom. The older facilities face stiffer competition. Competition naturally creates price discounts. With the Royal Commission into the Aged Care investigating both the standard of care being provided to senior Australians and the funding arrangement, it's a good time to also talk about who pays and how much. Okay, residential care, means tested, is it affordable? Is it a myth? Well, that article investigated it. Now, that lady that wrote it, Rachel Lane, is the principal of the Aged Care Gurus. I'll come back and say that again. It's all one word, Aged Care Gurus. Rachel Lane was her name. Might be an idea if you're thinking about going into a home or someone you know. Give them a call or get in touch. We looked there a moment ago, getting online. Well, now we're looking at U3A. It's the fun way to learn. This is taken from February 25th edition of the Senior newspaper. Written by Cheryl Field, it says, A university with no exams, no expectations, where fun and learning go hand in hand with friendly banter and perhaps a cuppa? Yes, it's true. The University of the Third Age, U3A, and there's more than likely one very near you. The movement has gone ahead in leaps and bounds since it was introduced to Australia in 1984. And no wonder. It's no secret that our population is ageing, but age is only a number for today's seniors. They're looking to get the most out of their third age. U3A Network New South Wales President Ian Robertson is a glowing example. He trained as a school teacher before moving on to work in the non-for-profit housing sector and then running his own bookshop at the ABC Centre. He readily admits to having been involved with community groups all his adult life, and U3A suited me fine, he said. The network is totally volunteer-run. All tutors are volunteers. They're not teachers or experts in their field. They are teaching. They simply want to help people. Like the course members, they want to learn something new. This is a shared journey of discovery. He said the volunteers in the U3A get something back themselves personally. Apart from helping your pals, you're creating something else for you to do. Thanks to the internet and the extent of the U3A network, Ian said that finding material for courses was not all that hard. He said the resources are out there now, so if you don't know a lot, be prepared to learn more. Do a course and you can go on forever. No one is expected to be a professional teacher. He said we're all equal. We're all working together in the community. Ian has led several courses, and he's especially chuffed that the Taboo Topics discussion group has been very, very popular indeed. He said, think subjects such as sex, politics, ethics, and religion are taboo? Think again, we love them. Subject matter in U3A courses is as diverse as the organisation's membership. It can be physically or intellectually stimulating. Always it's social. There are 68 U3A areas in New South Wales. They deliver courses to 35,000 people, and there's always room for more. Sounds a great way to learn and lots of fun, U3A. Here's how you contact them. Simply nsw.u3anet.org.au. You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network, and we'd like to tell you about the wonderful sponsor that this program has. It's the Seniors' Rights Service. They can help you with legal matters, advocacy, and education. All right, let's just quickly look at what they can do for us, keeping in mind it's all absolutely free. Legal. The Legal Service provides legal advice for older people in New South Wales. There's comprehensive referral service. Limited legal assistance for financially and socially disadvantaged older people. It covers such things as consumer rights, human rights, elder abuse, financial exploitation, planning for later in life. Advocacy. The service gives help for recipients of all Commonwealth-funded aged care services. They'll provide information about rights and responsibilities. They'll listen to your concerns. Help resolve problems or complaints with your aged care service providers. They'll speak up for your service provider if required, or refer other agencies where necessary. And the education side of it's very interesting too. Sessions are provided regarding the rights of older people on how the organisation or partner organisation can assist them. They promote service and provide information at community and professional events. They'll provide targeted education to a diverse range of older people. Now, this is regardless of culture, background or sexual orientation. All right, these wonderful people, Seniors' Rights, how do you contact them? It's 1-800-424-079, or you've got seniorsrightsservice.org.au. And I'm coming back to say that again. This is a wonderful service, you know. If you need help, particularly here with aged care packages, I don't think any of us understand those. Well, they provide sessions on them. Give them a call, 1-800-424-079, or the net, seniorsrightsservice.org.au. Coming to the end of the program now, we've just got a couple of short things to tell you about. The first one's a question. Can Botox fix depression? Botox is being tested as a treatment for depression based on the theory that our facial expressions influence our emotions. As well, we can reflect them. Researchers will test whether stopping the movement of the muscles used in frowning will actively alleviate depression. In Norway, at the Stavanger University, hospital science tested the treatment. They tested it alongside a placebo on about 50 older people, aged 65 and older, and it had great results. Well, wait, it gets better. More chocolates? We're all ears. This may sound too good to be true, but chocolate could protect the middle-aged from hearing loss. Doctors in South Korea have found the rate of hearing loss among people aged 40 to 65 was lower in those who ate chocolate. It was lower than amongst those who abstained. In a study of scientific journal Nutrients, the report that chemicals called polyphenols found in cocoa had antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. These may protect against hearing damage. And finally, early morning exercise may be the key to running away from dementia and stroke for older people. New research has found that by getting up and being active early, for those aged 57 to 80, can improve the blood flow. This improves blood flow to the brain and the rest of the body for most of the day. That is, even if they spend hours sitting down and being inactive. Morning exercises receive a blood flow boost to the brain about 4 hours later. Melbourne's Baker Heart and Diabetics Institute said this was vital for brain health. Well, that's all we have time for in the program today. You've been listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. I'm Dave Jeffrey, and I'd like to say thanks very much for being with me. Look forward to your company again soon.